everyone. It's time to eat, drink, and be merry with your hosts, Lisa and Nancy.
Welcome, everybody. If you're a fan of craft brew, you're so going to enjoy today's episode with filmmaker and producer Christo Brock. He's joining us to talk about his fantastic documentary. It's called Brewmance, and it is awesome. It really goes into the history of craft brew and how, you know, it's an American story, and this documentary follows two sets of entrepreneurs, home brew makers who decided to open a brewery in Long Beach, California, but it is so cool. It's just a great story of entrepreneurship, creativity, passion, and it's delicious. And you must drink a craft brew while you watch this. I'm just saying. It is out now on all video on demand platforms in the USA, Canada, UK, and beyond. And I encourage you to go to the website to learn more. Brewmancemovie.com. They're also out on all the social media channels. But welcome, Krista. How are you doing?
I'm good this morning. How are you?
Doing good. So what time are you allowed to drink beer? Like, do you start in the morning if you want? Do you care?
Well, depends on whether you're, like, on island time like I am right now. It's entirely relative.
Exactly. I don't know, you know, Nancy and I travel the country full-time. We document parks and public lands for a different magazine than what you're going to be in. It's our Parks and Travel magazine. And one thing we do is we get into the communities and look at what there is to see and do and focus on that. And we are finding across the country, I mean, we started in San Diego back in the late 90s, and San Diego is really blossoming in regards to becoming a, you know, craft brew destination. But we've been through, like, Asheville, North Carolina. We've been through all over the country, and we're seeing, like, even Erie, Pennsylvania has an ale trail, this blossoming. And I think it is really the last 10 to 20 years of just America really becoming a brewery destination, a craft brew destination. And watching your documentary, Brewmance, what I loved about it is that it really showcases how it started way back in the 70s even.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we used to have the worst beer in the world. In the 70s, like, beer was just boring. It was, like, one kind. It was a light, fruity lager. And this whole craft beer movement thing started with a bunch of restless homebrewers who basically said, you know what, I can make something that tastes better than what I can buy. And then this started to gather steam in the 70s. And eventually, some of those homebrewers thought, you know, I bet people want to buy my homebrew. And so those first wave of homebrewers, and there were like seven of them that started between like 76 and 1980, they just opened up these little microbreweries and started selling their beers. And, you know, I mean, back then, like, we Americans, we didn't have a lot of taste. We didn't really care what we ate or drank so much back then. It was like fast food was great, you know?
Yeah. TV
dinners. Coffee was that. Yeah, TV dinners, exactly, because it was fast and easy and it was like, you know, space age. And then, you know, coffee was terrible. It was that big pot of diner coffee that you see on the burner all day long. And bread was just Wonder Bread. And like in the last 40, 50 years, we've come so far. So, you know, now that Wonder Bread is now like a country sourdough batard, and your coffee is like a double macchiato skinny with something stirred in. You know what I mean? It's like we have become, I think, more sophisticated. Take that, Europe. Look at us. We're more sophisticated now.
Well, you know what? I grew up in South Africa and other countries, Kenya, England, and you can drink younger. I found that out on the airplane coming home to the States, and I was like, holy crap, they're not going to give me a drink, a beer or a wine on this airplane, and there's a screaming kid next to me. Stop it. But it was like a shock.
Well, Lisa, America's had such like a twisted relationship with alcohol. Like, it's crazy. I don't steal your words here, but like Prohibition totally wiped. We had a lot of breweries everywhere in this country pre-Prohibition. There was like there was a brewery in every little corner on every street, every little city and town, and Prohibition totally wiped that out. And the only companies that survived were the big brewers. Yeah.
And then we got Anchor, right? And that's, I love that you have Fritz Maytag in there, because Anchor, you know, brewing, I mean, his story is amazing. Like, he's just like, no, we're going to do it my way. Like, he went in like, that's it. I don't care. I'm doing it my way. He should have that song dedicated
to him. He was so funny. I mean, I really liked talking to Fritz, because he was just like, it's old. I'm going to tell you the way things were. And he did it this way. I'll tell you, when I first called him up to try to, like, got through to him to do an interview, he was like, what? Why do you want to talk? What are your questions? And I was like, well, as far as my research goes, you seem to have sort of been holding the torch for craft beer, you know, for like 10 years. He's like, yeah, absolutely true. And then he started sort of telling me all these stories. It's a lot of fun talking to that guy. He is so true.
The whole thing about going beyond Prohibition screwed us all up. I mean, and it's wrong. It's just wrong. And, you think now, okay, getting into the craft brew scene, coming from South Africa, drinking beer, getting over to this country, the first beer someone gave me was a Natural Light. And I about like, what? This is not beer. And I will say it escaped my mouth pretty fast. No offense, Natural Light. Other people dig it, but like, it was a shock. But as watching this grow, you know, and this whole movement grow, and as we travel, it's beautiful. But, you know, these home brewers, I have friends that were making it in their bathtubs and stuff when I was, you know, growing up here, like in my early 20s. They're like, you go to any guy's bathroom, and like, you're there to visit, and you're on a date, and you're like, what's all this stuff in the bathroom, you know? But, and even now we have friends who have a bed and breakfast in Asheville, the Lion and the Rose. They make beer for their guests. When you come in, you get their latest brew. And then they take their spent grain and they make dog biscuits and donate them to the shelters, the dog shelters in town. So it's like this movie.
It's like reuse.
You've got to go there. I'm telling you, it's really good. But following, you know, these two sets of entrepreneurs in Long Beach, it's really fascinating seeing the camaraderie of homebrewers, like how they support each other. And then it's like you're entering the business world, and it ain't that easy, man. It's hard and expensive.
No, but, you know, it's funny. It's one of the things that kind of struck me when I was starting to make this film. And one of the reasons I kind of wanted to make it is because I think the thinking with craft brewers is different than other business folk. Because normally, like, you're in business, you make a widget, you have competitors, you want to make your widget better than your competitor, you want to sell it for less, and you want to have more sales. And, like, basically, your competitor is your enemy, but not in craft beer. There's, like, this whole different thing going on, which is, like, my competitor can also be my friend. And there's room enough for everybody here, you know, to make great beer. And for a long time, you know, there wasn't a lot of craft beer, so the craft brewers were very much like this band of rebels that was making beer that wasn't like the big beer producers.
Right.
And, you know, there's a lot more craft brewers now. So that's started to change a little bit. But, I mean, for the most part, like, they're all just in leagues together. And they, you know, one guy runs out of yeast, calls up his pal, you know, down the street. And they'll, you know, they'll get them yeast or malt or something breaks. Someone will come and help you out. It's pretty awesome.
That's so cool.
Awesome.
That is so cool. And I think it does come from that stem of, like, you know, it's an art form and how in the creative, it's creative. And at the same time, too, what I really loved about it is how everyone was explaining and how you put this together of the explanation of how beer is made. Like, here's the four ingredients, but anything can change. And how it works, and also looking at water, because I look at, I mean, again, traveling the country, we're in different water like every day, and, you know, our bodies are like, what the heck is that? This doesn't taste good.
Yeah.
You know, everywhere you go, can you drink the water? And really, we're in a situation in this country with the water, but how technology is working hand in hand with the brewers now, with all this reverse osmosis and all this, it is like Willy Wonka land of brew, of making beer.
It is totally. And, you know, I mean, So today brewers have so much more control than they used to have like 100 years ago because all these different kinds of beers developed around the countries and around the world, a lot based on what they could find there, so the water that they had. So if you had like soft water like you have in the Czech Republic, you could make this kind of pilsner that had this kind of smooth silkiness to it. If you were in Newcastle, England, the water had a different quality. And so it tended to sort of bring out more pale ales and hop it a little bit more. There's some place, I don't remember exactly where it is, but have you ever had a goza? Do you know what a goza is?
A goza. It sounds familiar. I'm thinking... I'm thinking Grolsch. I don't think so.
No, so a goza is like this special kind of beer that's made from salty water. And it's like a slightly salty beer. When you first drink it, it's like, whoa. But once you, you know, it's an acquired taste once you get into it. And it's pretty amazing. And the reason they made that beer was because the water was slightly brackish. So it was slightly salt water. And they made a beer. That's what people around that area drank. And so it's delicious. And I had one in Portland from Germany. Maybe it's from Germany. That was like this smoked malt goza with lime. And it was crazy. I was drinking this and it tasted like I was drinking this freshly burned pinion leaves or branches. It was crazy. But the point is, so now brewers have so much control that they can make any kind of beer, any kind of style from all over the world. And your brewery can be anywhere, right? You don't have to be in Germany or the Czech Republic.
Yeah.
You can be in Erie, Pennsylvania, or my hometown of Philadelphia. And you can make a beer that's just like they made in England or Germany. So it's
I was going to say, there is a location thing, too, that some breweries are doing. Like,
yeah.
I even look at Dan and Jesse Sundstrom with 10 Mile Brewery, connects back to Hume Lake, which we're going back to in the Sequoias in the next couple of days. I'm excited. But how they go up there and how it relates to that, and that some of the breweries we've met or gone to in this country have actually tied it back to pieces of land and the water of the land. There was one, I think it was 49 in Little Rock, Arkansas, and their name was about the 49 trees in this one area that no one was allowed to touch conservation-wise, and it had to do with the creek running through and this whole thing. So in some ways they're taking maybe the name, but they can do, what you're saying, any kind of beer that they want.
Yeah, and the other thing that's great is that the beer that they make is like this personal expression. Right? So people are like, if you're a little craft brewer, you make any kind of beer you want. You know, you hope someone will drink it. And so Dan and Jesse from 10 Mile, kind of beers they like are sort of strident IPAs that feel like you're in the mountains, you know?
Mm.
And so those are the kind of beers they make. And then they also make sort of very classic German styles. And Liberation, the other, other brewery in the film, they like a slightly different thing. Like Eric likes brown ales and sessionable saisons and IPAs too. But so it's awesome because each kind of brewery reflects the taste of the brewer. So it does become like this artistic expression.
Yeah, it's interesting because Eric said like there's he was doing another thing at another brewery and. There was like, oh, this is blueberry, and I know that when it's seasonal, there's these seasonal beers, and there's some doing peach, and some are doing this. And when we were in Erie, Pennsylvania, there's the brewery. It's called Brew Erie, and he started the ale trail out there, and Chris, and we were sitting down. They made beer that was infused with bourbon. I mean, they were doing some crazy stuff with fruit that you would never think of. Like mango and chili, and I'm like, what the hell? But it tasted really good, but they changed the whole, like, this is, they had all your different kinds, like IPAs and everything, but then they had these just off-the-wall things, and then it was like, a challenge to say, okay, we're making beer, but it's not going to taste like beer at all. And then here comes Eric in the film. He's like, no fruit is touching beer. Like, I'm not, no. So everybody is completely different, and I think that's the beauty of it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the great thing about homebrewers is they've kind of redefined what beer is, you know? Because, like, I don't know if you've ever heard of the Rheingebot, but it's like this set of laws that Germany passed, I don't know, 400 years ago. It said that beer can only be made of water, malt, hops, and yeast. Those are the only four ingredients. And so, yeah, I mean, the Germans are very structured. They're very good at what they do. They make wonderful beer, and they make wonderful cars, too. But they, you know, they're very good at what they do, but they have these rules that they give themselves. And we Americans are like, rules? No, screw that. We're not going to have rules. We're going to break those rules, and I'm going to put blueberry in my beer, and that's going to be beer. And I'm going to age it in a bourbon cask, and that's going to be beer. Blah, blah, blah. Beer, beer, beer. You know? It's just like, I mean, so that's kind of, I think I might have, like, angered some of my, some of our Canadian neighbors by saying that craft beer is an American invention.
Well, it's
but
different.
But it kind of is, because, like, we're,
I mean, yeah.
That's the way we are.
I think what's great, too, you know, to me is the story of entrepreneurship and just really going for it. And what I wanted to ask you is, like, looking at, you know, what you've done in the past with Touch the Wall, your swimming documentaries, mm-hmm. you've got your sports film, Spirit of the Marathon, and Hood to Coast. Now you're in beer. You know, I know you're going from beer and you're jumping in a tank with, you know, I mean, from sports into the tank of beer. But in a way, isn't that kind of similar? Because sports is like, you know, you have to have that focus, that zone. You have to have that drive with your passion to really go for it and to win. So did you find those similarities mm-hmm. when you were making this documentary?
Well, I'll say as, like, an independent filmmaker, like, every film I make is like a little startup business because it's a whole different world with a whole different people and a whole different audience, which I can say is a little frustrating because I kind of feel like, can I just run off the laurels from the last film? But it also makes it interesting. And, I like a good story. So I didn't particularly – I wasn't a big beer aficionado before the film. I just thought it would make a really interesting reveal and story. And I found a couple groups that were interesting and going through something. Hopefully the film tells a story.
I love it because you follow, you know, Dan and Jesse and then the Liberation Boys in their pathway and being able to do it with them both being in Long Beach, to be able to follow their journey, the good, bad, and the ugly, and the delicious, right?
Yeah.
It's because it's not easy, and you showed the truth. I thought that was really amazing that they allowed that to happen as well. Like, you know, kudos, because we're so politically correct now. You know, everything is so, you know, shiny and polished. And if that's not the truth about opening a business or following your passion and keeping the integrity of the beer, that's important too. So your last question is, if you could have a beer with anyone in the world, alive or passed on, who would it be? Where would you go and what would you be drinking with that person?
Wow.
It's a happy hour question. It's cool.
Well, you know what? I would probably have a beer with Barack Obama. And what would it be? Well, I drank a lot of really great beers on this journey. But I really did like the beers that Vinny Salerzo made up in Russian River. He makes Pliny the Elder and Pliny the Younger, which are kind of these mythical beers. But he also makes all these other crazy beers. And where would I be? I'd probably be sitting on a boat in the Bay of Long Beach.
Sweet. I love that. You know, that ties to our music coming up. And listen, Anthony Bourdain got to have a beer with Barack Obama. Like, seriously. That is, you know, I wonder if we got to see the whole conversation, you know what I mean, on film, what we got to see on TV.
Yeah.
But
I mean,
that
I have
would
to
be...
say, he seems like a cool dude who's clearly knows things. And I don't know if you ever saw his, like, press correspondence dinner from the last year. That guy is hilarious. He is seriously funny.
He is funny. He is really, really funny. He is, and George Bush, no matter what anyone, you know, he was pretty funny too. And I think it's funny, the two of them now. I think to have beer with both of them right now would be pretty interesting. And Anthony Bourdain.
That would be hilarious.
That would be funny. And hey, listen, George Bush does good paintings. But I'm not going to get in there. I'm not going to get myself in trouble with anything now, because I will. I'll get all the emails, trust me. But speaking about Long Beach, we're going to close with a song. Mm-hmm. It is called Oceanfront Walk, and this is where we met Johnny Master and the Mama's Boys, who used to play out in Long Beach, and one of the top blues bands of Long Beach, and also Venice Beach. We used to hang out a bunch there. And we even went on a blues.
Venice Beach.
I miss Venice Beach, man. That was like a blast. I'm just the drum circles on the beach and crazy.
Yeah.
Do you remember the umbrella lady? I don't know if she's still alive.
Oh, yeah. Remember Harry Carey, the guy with the guitar and the roller skates that roll around?
Yeah. He was in some movie. I can't remember what it was. Yeah, he was in some movie.
Yeah.
But he's classic.
I saw him at a gym working out. And was like, oh,
really?
He's like, hey, how you doing? I was like, he's like, yeah.
That ruins it, though. That kind of ruins
job.
It. I know, but you want to, you know, you stay in your uniform. No, but the last time, well, one of the last times we saw the Mama's Boys perform was actually on one of those little cruise boats in Long Beach. And we got lost in the harbor. We almost missed the boat.
The booze cruise. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So we did that. So I think this is a perfect song. Everyone, again, the website is brewmancemovie.com. Definitely go see it. Well, go get it. It's on demand everywhere in the U.S., on all the major VOD platforms. Canada, watch it to see if you know, who's got the best brews. And U.K. as well. So check that out. But here it is. Oceanfront Walk. Thank you so much, Chris. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Lisa. I appreciate it. It's been fun.
Take care.
You too.